Jennifer Zamparelli on 2FM.
Sponsored by Virgin Mobile. We'll tell you when your phone is paid off. Virgin Mobile. Bring on amazing.
Jennifer Zamparelli, 2FM. Good morning. So Talia Lavin went undercover in a white supremacist online community. She was creating fake personas that would gain her access to horrible parts of the internet, normally off limits to her, a Jewish woman. She has written a book called Culture Warlords, My Journey into the Dark Web of White Supremacy, and wants us to know that white supremacists aren't the hillbilly, uneducated people that we all have in our heads. Talia, good morning.
Hello. Hi. Hello, Ireland.
Hello. How are you? So where in the world are you?
I'm in New York right now. But I'm thinking of the green veils of Erin.
You need to get over here. Get over here and do all the usual stuff of having pints of Guinness and walking down Grafton Street and enjoying yourself. But listen, let's talk about what you've done, because this story is quite incredible. So you were a journalist living and working away, but the Unite the Right rally in Charlottesville in the summer of 2017 really made you feel unsafe. Isn't that right?
Well, it changed my ideas of the world. You know, I'm a Jewish woman. I'm the granddaughter of Holocaust survivors. And I really thought I was living the American dream, kind of safe, secure. I went to Harvard. Felt like I was, you know, living out my grandparents' dreams of safety and security in America. And then those images and sounds of, you know, people shouting, "Jews will not replace us," shook, I would say, some of the security at the core of my foundation. And I started studying the far right from that moment. You know, I'd seen anti-Semitism before, I'd experienced it before, but that public spectacle really made me realize how deep it was. And so yeah. I've been studying the far right ever since.
Okay. I mean, just going back to what happened, I mean, seeing it kind of shook you to your core. I mean, seeing a car drive into protesters, killing 30-year-old Heather Heyer, must have been like a light switch. Obviously for you, it was a light switch going off, but a terrifying moment.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it really illustrates just how inextricable far-right ideology is from violence. Mm. You know, this was a moment where they were, you know, flexing. They were showing how dominant and secure they were under this presidential administration. And of course, deadly violence that killed Hare, but also injured dozens more. You know, immediately followed and terrorized a beautiful small city. And so I think to me, it was a really, really apropos demonstration of just how inextricable those ideas and those identities are from violent acts.
Talia, as a young Jewish woman, had you ever felt unsafe or unwelcome before?
So I spent the first couple of years of my journalism career working for a Jewish newswire called the Jewish Telegraphic Agency that provided stories to Jewish papers. And you know, as sort of a young intern, one of my jobs was to moderate comments and see where the sources of traffic for our website were coming from. And very often the comments would be wanting to dismember or murder our writers. I noticed that some of the largest drivers, especially to articles about Jewish celebrities or articles about scandals were mm-hmm. often from Nazi sites. So I was certainly aware that there were anti-Semites there on the internet. I think, though, it was the public spectacle, the sort of unashamed, proud waving of the swastika and these chants about Jews by hundreds of people. It did sort of shift my mindset. I had been aware. I had been made to feel unsafe somewhat, but it felt a little more abstracted and less personal. And then it became personal, and I am a very stubborn person. And when something gets personal, it gets personal. And
yes.
So I've been studying the far right for the past 5 years, and I've gone quite deep ankle.
Yes, you have. You listen, let's talk about this. You took a very deep dive and infiltrated their chat rooms. Firstly, how did you do this?
So I had been working for a couple of years in that space, writing about different groups.
Okay.
The biggest app I used is an encrypted chat app called Telegram. It's become a real gathering space for neo-Nazi groups and the far right sort of across the spectrum. I created some personas and identities. Some were female, some were male. I also posed as an incel. So that's a radically misogynist movement, also far right, but based primarily on misogyny rather than racism, and entered their message boards. And I catfished on an all-white dating site. So wow. There were techniques.
You were busy, Talia. You were a busy woman getting all that done. Okay, so we'll talk about what you discovered, because you need us to know that they aren't all a bunch of, you know, toothless rednecks, right?
Yeah, so I call this the myth of the toothless Cletus. This idea, particularly in the U.S., obviously, but I don't know what the parallel would be in Ireland. But this idea that anyone who is sort of a neo-Nazi or anyone who really falls deep into sort of radically anti-immigrant or radically far-right sentiment of any kind is someone who simply lacks education or possibly is impoverished, you know, someone who's really on the margins of society socioeconomically and educationally. And I have to tell you that in my work, I have just absolutely found this to not be true. Of course, that applies to some folks in the white power movement, but not everyone by a long mile. There are people with, you know, significant higher education. I remember one person that I interacted with undercover on this white supremacist dating site was an assistant professor in Zurich.
Wow.
You know, of course, Richard Spencer, one of our more famous white supremacists, famously went to Duke University, which is well considered here in the U.S. There are people from every level of educational attainment from all over the socioeconomic spectrum, including many people who are wealthy, who are sympathetic to these causes.
Powerful people?
Wealthy and powerful people, mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, like one of our biggest white supremacist sites, vdare.com, is like bankrolled to the extent that they literally operate out of a small castle, which, you know, castles are a little more common in Ireland, but we have relatively few in the United States.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And I'm like, where's my castle for fighting Nazis out of? Anyway, I think just like it's very easy for people to sort of hear about hate groups, hear about neo-Nazis and dismiss them as sort of these people must be poor, uneducated, stupid. But there are two reasons why I think that's a really important sort of idea to strike out of your mind.
Mm-hmm.
One, it's sort of self-protective in a way for white people to think this way. It's us saying it couldn't be anyone I know. It couldn't be anyone in my neighborhood. It couldn't be the person working next to me or a parent in my kid's school. When in fact it could be, you know, this kind of ideology, what it preys on in people is loneliness, alienation, is a feeling of a lack of purpose. And that's something that you can feel regardless of your level of education or what neighborhood you live in. And the second part of why I think that this is an important preconception to dispel is that, you know, it provides them some cover to think that way.
Yeah.
And it makes you feel this false sense of security. It couldn't be one of us. And also it's like, well, if these people are so marginalized and so desperate, in some way their choice to adopt these hateful ideologies is understandable. And to me, yes, they are human, and I acknowledge their full humanity. And I think the fact that they are as fully human and morally complex as you and I does not absolve them of any of their choices. In fact, it condemns them further. It's their very humanity that makes their choice every day to spread, disseminate, and marinate in hate so utterly condemnable.
Is America now, is it it doesn't sound like it, but is it healing a little bit, or is the damage done, and is it worse than ever now? I mean, how do you feel about the situation? Is enough being done, or do you worry for the future?
Well, it's my job to be worried, and also my natural inclination as an anxious human being who studies the worst. I would say this, it was interesting. Like, my book came out, and then just a few months later, the events of January 6th happened, you know, with the storming of the Capitol. And I, like many watchers of the far right, our primary surprise was that more people didn't die that day. We knew something like this was going to happen. So I spent the couple of months after my book was published and leading up to the election, working with a couple of other people to infiltrate militia groups and other sort of potentially violent groups around the election. And particularly, I joined a sort of encrypted walkie-talkie style chat for the Georgia 3% Security Force, which is a militia based in the U.S. South. And I was listening in to what they said. I was under a false identity. I used a false voice, but I did an hour-long voice interview to join this group. And I listened over the course of several months as they became more and more radicalized by the conspiracy theories about the election being stolen. I was kicked out 1 week before the events of January 6th, but members of those that group were there at the Capitol. And I have friends who, as anti-fascists and as journalists, were covering the events of that day. You know, I have a dear friend who the Proud Boys put out a hit on, and, you know, who that evening after witnessing the chaos and turmoil, you know, she said, "I'm Googling, how do I get tear gas out of a wig?" Because she had to wear a disguise in order to cover the event because the Proud Boys had put out a hit on her.
Wow. So it's crazy. It is crazy.
It's a crazy world. And like, I think in the United States, what we have now, first of all, certainly the Republicans have made kind of a devil's bargain to an extent, acknowledging, like, they have not kept extremists who loosely or fully align with their party at arm's length. Republican officials have used militias as security at multiple events. There are candidates who have, you know, candidates for 2022. There are congressional elections who have risen out of conspiracy movements like QAnon, and current representatives in Congress who similarly have risen out of these movements. And so, you know, the GOP has made this devil's bargain of, well, this increases the fervor of our base. And they do this at the expense of the multiracial democracy that is America at its best, you know, and they, you know, with voter suppression laws, with anti-gay laws, with anti-feminist laws, are largely working to implement a far-right agenda across the United States. And so watching the sort of footsie and the blurring of the lines between extremist groups and Republican legislatures is very unnerving. And yeah, it does make me worry for the future.
Talia, come and move to Ireland. Come on over. We've loads of space, a few castles knocking around. But seriously, have you ever considered leaving the United States?
The thing is, like I said, I'm a stubborn person. And so one of the many, you know, when you're studying the white supremacist movement, you have to become fluent in their codes. So, you know, for example, there's like they use the number 88 as because H is the eighth letter of the alphabet. So that's Heil Hitler. Well, one of their big statistics, it's a false statistic, and I've seen the graphic that it's based on, and it's utter tosh, but it's this idea that Jews have been kicked out of 109 countries. Well, you know, one of the big chat rooms that I was surveilling was called Make America 110. And sometimes people will just comment on my posts, 110. They can't wait to kick the Jews out of America. Well, you're going to have to drag me kicking and screaming. This is my home. And I will not be told to leave by anyone. I will be here. I will be defending America as a multiracial democracy and exposing these people for as long as I can, as hard as I can.
And thank God for people like you, and keep doing what you're doing. Your book, Culture Warlords, My Journey into the Dark Web of White Supremacy, is out now. It is a fascinating read and educational, to say the least. And everybody not around the world should read this. This is not a problem just in America. This is a global issue as well.
Yeah. And I should just add that it does talk about white supremacists in Europe, in the UK, in Australia and New Zealand, and there's really a sort of global network that I call white internationalism, you know, white nationalists across the world talking to one another and sending money to one another. And, you know, unfortunately, present in Ireland, as well as, you know, many, many, many other countries with colonial...
It's a global issue. It really is. And I commend your bravery for putting yourself through what you had to go through to write this book and to bring this information to the forefront. So well done.
Yeah, thank you so much, Jen. Erin Gilbrah.
Thank you for saying. Erin Gilbrah, thank you, Talia. And lovely, lovely chatting to you, although it was quite frightening. Thanks, Talia. There we go. That is Talia Lavin, all the way from the United States of America. It's called Culture Warlords, My Journey into the Dark Web of White Supremacy. It is out now. It's a fascinating read. It is a global issue. And I think I need a minute. We'll be right back.
Jennifer Zamparelli on 2FM.